This is the Lombardi Line
with Ben Wilson and Mike Pritchard
on VSiN.
Hey, everybody, welcome in. It's the Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM live from downtown Las Vegas, our Circa Sportsbook studios with Mike Pritchard. He's back.
I am.
Good to see you, Mike.
Great to be with you, Ben. How are you?
Oh, we're good.
Good,
good. Missed you yesterday. Little line flip this week. Usually, Michael Lombardi's off days yesterday, but he is off today. So instead, we got Mike Pritchard here, former college football national champion, NFL wide receiver. I'm Ben Wilson, Matt Santos behind the glass, and a very fun show today, which we start by taking a look at the state of the NFC East. Who would have thought? The AFC East and NFC East, your two best divisions by overall record, Mike. Kind of wild to believe that after, and again, because of the Monday night result here, where all four teams now are at least 500 or better.
How about that? I know. I mean, the expectations going into the year, and you think about some of the teams, the Cowboys at the forefront, when you think about and consider the NFC East all the time. The Eagles on the come up, Ben, because of the last couple of years, the transactions, making the playoffs too, and okay, will Jalen Hurts emerge and be that type of quarterback? Oh, that question was answered quickly. But the surprise, 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 the New York Giants. Who was that? Gomer Pyle did that? Surprise. Okay. I'm dating myself. That's before you.
I'm just going to go along with it.
Nod
the head,
No, I didn't think I was going to say that ever on air. But the New York Giants, that's a surprise. And then the Commanders hanging in there. But it's a competitive division and opportunity, I think, for bettors as we look at the second half of the season moving forward now.
Michael and I had this conversation yesterday coming off the win for the Washington Commanders. And we now have the updated win totals. We usually get the updated division, conference, Super Bowl odds every Tuesday morning from BetMGM. Wednesdays is when the updated in-season win total odds come out now. So we're looking at Washington, a team that was one of the biggest movers to the under in the preseason, from 8.5, heavy respected action down to 7.5. If you look at it right now, Washington, who wins the game to go to 5-5, at least keeping themselves in the mix for one of the wild card spots in the NFC, you look at the schedule, Mike, it's not exactly a murderer's row here of teams that the Commanders are going to have to play. But we always go into that back and forth of, do we overreact to the big one-off upset wins in a primetime spot, or is that a sign of things to come? When you look at what's still to come here for Washington, as we kind of start at the bottom of the division and work our way up, what's a realistic win total you see the Commanders getting to?
I tell you what, and I've been doing some research on this for a couple weeks now. I think anything and everything's on the table in the National Football League this year, and here's why. Look at that schedule one more time for Washington. Tell me which team has a quarterback that just scares the bejesus out of you.
No.
There isn't one, right? I mean, remember how the quarterback's supposed to mean so much to a number and the quarterback's supposed to make the difference. But we know this year in particular, the National Football League, the running game really is leading the way now. And we've talked about that for several weeks here on the network, but I think when you have a chance, and teams feel like they have a chance in fourth quarters now, there's no quarterback that's out there on that schedule for Washington that, like, Washington is going to feel like they're in every game. You know, we have Taylor Heinicke, or even if it's Carson Wentz. I think Heinicke should be the guy. We'll get to all that. But the Texans, I mean, that's one of those games. If we can get our running game revved up and we can get to some play action, we got some playmakers on the outside. That, to me, is the bulk of the National Football League right now. There are a few, very few, if even a handful, of elite quarterbacks in the league right now that will scare you and make you feel like you don't have a chance, right? So if you can get the buy-in from everybody, and certainly the Commanders, they have the opportunity here within that division as well. I think everything should be on the table as bettors as well. We should look at it that way.
You mentioned the Carson Wentz piece of this as the formerly injured quarterback. This is now the week he would be eligible to come off the IR, but Ron Rivera saying yesterday in his press conference they have not yet cleared him, the medical staff is, to resume any sort of throwing activities with his finger injury that landed him on the IR. It just seems like, you like to use the term window dressing all the time.
Yeah,
it just seems ridiculous to even consider the notion that they'd possibly let Wentz back in as the starting quarterback. It makes no sense when you watch how good Heinicke has been, even if the numbers aren't great. 4-1 as a starter. Wentz has put up some of the worst numbers of anybody in the NFL this year,
right,
as a starting quarterback. How do you even have that conversation?
Right, well, now? You know, it's speculation too. I mean, a lot of times the media gets and try to tries to get in front of it for stories, but the league is about a get better league, right? And we know that. Or it's an upgrade league. How do you get better? You upgrade, or you add a great player or two. But if you have a situation in which everything's equal, then you're going to go with the hot hand, and the hot hand right now is Heinicke. Carson Wentz is not an upgrade over Taylor Heinicke. He's not. Even after the finger heals and he hasn't been throwing, you see the rapport, you see the relationship, the chemistry that Heinicke has already developed, and he already had it, to be honest with you. So I don't know why, other than speculation, why we as bettors would think they're going to make a switch here. If it was an upgrade situation, like if Carson Wentz was this Hall of Fame quarterback and yeah, he's healthy, okay, we get that, right, as players. But in that locker room, the respect and the credibility is on the side of Taylor Heinicke right now, more so than Carson Wentz.
It just amazes me that when you look at the schedule, how soft that is for Washington. 7.5 has been the win total basically the entire season.
Mm-hmm.
Right now at MGM, they pulled it off the board.
Right.
At DraftKings, it's still 7.5.
Okay.
You're telling me with the schedule still to come, a 5-5 team with there's 7 games left. You're telling me that 3-4 wins you that bet?
Mm-hmm.
-130 is the juice you'd have to lay.
Well, think about it.
Texans, Giants twice, Browns, Cowboys, all still to come here for Washington.
Right, they are a 3.5 point favorite, right, on the road, with Taylor Heinicke. I mean, I think the market or the books are telling us that, you know, the value of quarterbacks out the window here. This is a lot different. And is it about the scheme? No. Is it about Heinicke playing this well? He's played okay, but. You know who's played better is their defense, right? I think the belief and selves right now for the Commanders is in play, you know, and the defense has played better. They're getting better. They're going to have Chase Young come aboard too. And offensively, you know, they got a two-headed monster at running back with two bruising running backs. One guy can catch the ball. Both of them can catch the ball. But then that's opened up so much other offense and play making ability from McLaurin. I mean, they're all over the place, and I think from a schematic standpoint, you can get excited about the Commanders and Turner and what he wants to do with this quarterback and Heinicke.
So yes, with the Texans, Falcons, Giants twice, Browns amidst the final 7-game stretch, that's a bet. That would be a very reasonable over to make if you have confidence and trust that Heinicke remains the guy in Washington for the rest of the division. We had been waiting to see what would happen for Philadelphia once they had a little bit of adversity. We're seeing some of the odds come back now on the Eagles. Not tremendously. Still favored to win the NFC and overwhelmingly so to win the division.
Mm-hmm.
Where really the only big movement has been Jalen Hurts. His MVP odds take a hit. He's now moved into the third position on that overall list. Michael said yesterday he felt like that was the best thing that could have happened to Philadelphia.
Right.
Having that whole notion of being an undefeated team off of their backs. Now they can kind of hone in, focus here going down the stretch. What was your takeaway, though, from the first time they'd trailed all season in the second half and were unable to get a stop on, as much as we're being complimentary of Taylor Heinicke, pretty mediocre offense?
Yeah, I mean, the Eagles said it, too. I mean, A.J. Brown had some comments about, like, look, we're no longer talking about that stuff anymore. I cleaned it up for what he said. In
Thanks
terms of going 7th, you're welcome.
Your no anger problem. Translator.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That was pressure, though, by the way, for the fact that they're going to mention it. I mean, obviously, they're going to get it each and every week. Now they don't have to talk about it. But one thing did emerge, too, that is a little bit concerning, and I think Eagles will have time to adjust to it. Shane Steichen was just calling plays in that game. If you look at Washington, they took advantage of weaknesses. They took advantage of matchups that they thought were favorable for them in that game to the tune of what they possessed the ball for 40 minutes, right? When you have an offense that possesses the ball under 20 minutes, you're just calling plays. You're just doing what you think you should be doing as opposed to understanding, hey, we might have some matchups. Now, A.J. Brown getting nicked up a little bit. Dallas Goedert's going to be out too. So this offense is as creative as it is. And Jalen Hurts doing very, very well. If you're just calling plays and everybody's caught up to what you're doing from a tendency standpoint, you're going to be possessing the ball for 20 minutes again.
Yeah.
Right? And so.
It was what, 6 minutes in the first half?
It was brutal. It was brutal. So they need to evolve that. I thought they did. We did a wrong route, right route segment. And I thought by emphasizing the matchup with A.J. Brown, that was the evolution of that offense. But when he got nicked up in the game, obviously they stayed away from that matchup if they had one.
The report from NFL Network got her to miss extended time, but apparently it is not a season-ending injury with the shoulder. But Eagles 8-1, Giants still holding steady at 7-2 in the division. Cowboys now 6-3. For the Giants, it was another kind of lackluster performance. They let the Texans hang around in that game. Houston had multiple possessions inside the Giants' red zone where they came up with no points. You still buying this Giants team that, look, 7-2, they've built up so much of
of
an advantage and an edge just from a scheduling perspective. But how real do you view this team now down the stretch?
Man, they have enjoyed not playing within a division. How about that?
That's a very nice way to phrase it. Yeah.
Right, because it's stacked up against them. They got one more game here coming up, and you can get to, what, 8 wins maybe? Okay, there's your win total. But then when they get stacked up with that division in the back half of the schedule, you wonder if that's where the Giants are going to hit a skid. But, I mean, they built up enough equity. I love how you said that. They built up incredible amount of equity going up against unfamiliar opponents, and the style of play has helped them along the way as well.
And that 8.5, that was the preseason win total. They're up to 10.5 now in season. Not sure I'd be running to the window to make that.
No.
But it's an interesting division. We'll have much more to say on this division as well as awards. We'll discuss some awards talk in a little bit because one of the key players for the Giants, Saquon Barkley, he features heavily in one of the main races on the awards as well. Big show for you today. Howard Bender talks some fantasy and other betting angles for us coming up a little bit later this hour. Harry Gagnon from the Against All Odds podcast will stop by as well in hour number two. It's all still to come here on the Lombardi Line.
You're listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN
with Ben Wilson and Mike Pritchard.
It is time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM is all of your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. I know Mike Pritchard always gambles responsibly. You're part always of that teaser syndicate?
I am.
How's that been going?
Really well. Really well. I found out, Ben, that I'm a good teaser player.
Oh. This guy is just so, I am.
Humbled about it. I'm humbled about it. Yeah, absolutely. But no, there's a couple guys in the syndicate, man. They've already cashed a 15-teamer. Came close. They came to a bad coaching decision from McCarthy from cashing another one.
Wow.
I got to show you this ticket. I'll show it to you.
We'll get it out.
Yeah.
We'll see what that's like.
Yeah, it's incredible.
15 teams.
But no, the text you get, it's like, why didn't he punt the football? He went for it.
McCarthy.
There. Yeah, McCarthy.
That's the one team we'll mention this really quick. We didn't get to the Cowboys within the NFC East. But as much as Dak Prescott, if he doesn't throw two just horrific interceptions, we're probably not even having the conversation.
Right.
Was that not the quintessential McCarthy game management type position? And isn't that the exact thing that gives you pause about backing Dallas in the future?
It does. It does, especially when it prevents you from cashing a 15-teamer. I mean, it's crazy to think about. But 14 or 15, I think it was 15. But the ticket says and suggests, that was just one of those situations where you get frustrated by it. And a lot of people have, right? I mean, not only fans, but bettors. I mean, how do you consistently bet with the Dallas Cowboys knowing that that guy is the head coach?
Yeah. And from having played in the league, you have, I would think more than most people, you have a very innate sense of, because you can probably tell when the players on the field and the coach, there's just a little bit of disconnect.
Yeah.
And the personnel and then the game strategy doesn't really match what the strengths and weaknesses are. Do you see that pretty clearly with Dallas?
Well, with other teams, for sure. Not so much with Dallas. I mean, I think there's a disconnect because, Dallas without Zeke, it's like we can't run the football. But then Tony Pollard's like, yeah, you can. Just give it to me, right? And, okay, they established that. And then along the way, that helps out Dak Prescott too. But they just get themselves in trouble, whether it's discipline, whether it's coaching decisions, whether they're too one-dimensional, they get caught up in and scheme a lot. And then also defensively, I mean, maybe there's a toughness thing that's going on with why they can't stop the run. But I look at the head coach and why things are not different and why they stay the same with the Cowboys.
We saw it manifest itself in the playoffs last year. Mm-hmm. They faced a really well-oiled machine, a multidimensional squad in right. San Francisco. It all came crashing down. And we're going to find out this week, see the schedule. Mm-hmm. Going to Minnesota, looking at the way the market has reacted here, this at one point was Dallas on the opener -2.5 in Minnesota. This has come down. We're at about Minnesota getting a point or point and a half as I check the updated screen. But you look at the big matchup that Dallas will have to prevent defensively. It's not so much the run game this week that Dallas struggled against on Green Bay, but it's Justin Jefferson, who I know for you as a former wideout, you can appreciate probably more than most what type of special season he is having here. And Jefferson, as we start to transition into looking at some of the awards now midway through the year, he and Tyreek Hill, it's pretty much a two-player race for Offensive Player of the Year. And for Jefferson, like, what more can you say about a guy who, with, you know, the weapons obviously have been invested in Minnesota, and they've gotten every single break and winning 7 straight one-score games. But for Jefferson, you would think this is pretty sustainable, wouldn't you, with how amazing he's continued to be every single week?
Yeah, what you like about all these guys, Offensive Player of the Year odds right here, what we're looking at is that they have a chip, man. They have something to prove. I love the fact, look, I love Justin Jefferson's game. I've stated that. Since his rookie year, this guy is a phenomenal football player. Phenomenal, and he's getting better. But he's also hungry still. And the thing about what his performance said to me was not only helping your team win a game on the road against a superior opponent, I think, and that atmosphere too, but on the other side of the field was the guy you replaced. And you know what kind of bravado Stephon Diggs had, right?
Oh, yeah.
But now... Yeah, we drafted me, and now this is my spot, and now I'm the premium guy on this team. And that performance was indicative of that. That, like, I'm taking you on the field right now, Ben, because that is what fed, I believe, for that guy to have part of that performance that he had is just on the other side of the field is the guy I replaced, and he thinks he's better than me. But I want to show him that, no, we're better off without you, right? And so all that stuff is in the locker room. All that stuff is talked about during a week of practice, and for him to go out there and display that ability and win the game, help his team win the game that way, it's just unlocking so much more for this young man.
Right. You think, too, about how in narrative-driven markets, and certainly for Offensive Player of the Year, the statistical basis is a little weighed a little bit heavier than some of the other markets we'll talk about here in a second, but how much do you think, at least if you're thinking about general perception on Jefferson, to make a catch like he did in that situation against Buffalo on a 4th-and-18 against the team to beat, the Super Bowl favorites last week. Combined with his stats, he's second in the league in basically every category in receptions and yards, behind only Tyreek Hill.
Right.
How much of that do you think impacts this race specifically when you lay everything out that you just did?
Well, we're off of a year in which Cooper Kupp, you know, had the year that he had at that position, and now Justin Jefferson's in that same offense, right? And he's doing similar things. And Tyreek Hill has been phenomenal, though. I think if you're looking for any type of bet from Offensive Player of the Year odds, then, okay, Patrick Mahomes is in the MVP race.
Favorite right now.
Yep. And then you got Lamar Jackson probably in the MVP situation, too. Saquon Barkley, kind of, and Derrick Henry, I think both of those guys are in that comeback player of the year discussion. And then you got these receivers. Tyreek Hill's doing something that he's never been done before, maybe 2,000 yards from a receiver. And then Justin Jefferson. Now, the touchdowns are low. I think both of these guys still have 4 touchdowns, right?
Right.
But the impact that they're making on the teams, you cannot deny that. If anything hurts Tyreek Hill, it's because he's got Waddle on the opposite side. And Waddle has been phenomenal, too. Whereas Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen? I mean, you see, he's kind of doing it all
it's
by
like
himself.
TJ Hockenson?
Those guys are going to help, I think, but he's kind of doing it all by himself, whereas – you know, Tyreek Hill has just been spectacular, but also Jalen Waddle has been spectacular too. So if there's a narrative that could separate those two, that could be it.
Right. I think what the Broncos released, it was like their top 10 catches in team history last year. You made that. You were on the list.
I led the list. I don't know about number one, but I led the list.
You were, it was what, 94? 4 or 5 again with a catch from John Elway.
Yeah, that was 90. 95, I want to say.
95?
95, yeah.
So I'm bringing this up because here's the bio, by the way. I'm Mike Pritchard, if you didn't know. So you know a thing or two about making incredible catches. Mm-hmm. Where did the Jeff – that's been kind of been the – this is not a betting thing, I realize. Right. But this has been the talking point throughout the week. Where did the Jefferson catch rank for you as somebody who has been known to make a amazing catch a time or two?
Fourth and 18, it was everything. Because the game's over if he doesn't make it.
Right.
On the other side of that, the DB just knocked it down instead of trying to catch
having
it.
Having a Buffalo ticket, that's what I was saying.
There you go. But, no, it's up there as one of the greatest catches of all time because of the meaning of it. The impact of it. And then he backed it up, too, you know, getting the team down there, almost scoring a touchdown. So he was on a different level. That is an out-of-body experience. That is getting to a different level, something that you never think you can get to when you make plays like that. But the fact that he made consecutive plays, big plays in that game, in those moments, means everything.
And if there's a – it's tough because the numbers have shortened pretty drastically. But you'd have to think, too, I mean, we always talk about this. The team success also is a big indicator.
Right.
And you have – I mean, it's the reason why for Miami and Minnesota, Dolphins at 7-3, Vikings 8-1. Mm-hmm. These two have really separated themselves, Jefferson and Hill, in that market, plus 225 now for Jefferson and Hill plus 350. The comeback player of the year is also the interesting one. So you mentioned Barkley. He's your favorite, minus 115. Geno Smith takes a step back with a loss in Germany against Tampa this week at even money. Yeah. Anything you – I mean, I've been very clear. I don't want to bet this market after what happened to me last year with Dak Prescott.
All right.
But what do you – were? I know you were just on some podcasts there in New York talking about the Giants. What do you see in Saquon here? Is that the play?
Well, I don't know if it's a play because they're about to hit that gauntlet within their division, And so we just saw what happened with Washington and Philly. Whereas Derrick Henry's at 20-1. If he goes on the road against the Packers and has a fantastic game – those odds are going to change too, though, right? I mean, Derrick Henry is everything for the Titans right now. And I know offensive player of the year and all this stuff, spectacular player.
It's amazing how the future, the awards odds do not give the Titans any respect. We mentioned yesterday, I know Mike Vrabel won the award last year. He's 100-1 to win coach of the year.
I know.
How is that possible?
I don't know.
How is Derrick Henry 20-1 to win comeback player of the year?
Right. I mean, what is Geno Smith coming back from?
That's a good point. our VSiN pro tip of the hour kind of leads into this. Recognize when these numbers have shifted drastically. There's really not much value to be had when you could have gotten Barkley 20-1 or Nick Sirianni 20-1 to win coach of the year. He's now even money. Just keep that in mind as we go down the stretch with looking at these awards, your pro tip of the hour here on VSiN. When we come back, Howard Bender, Roto Buzz guy, joins us on the Lombardi Line.
You're listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN
with Ben Wilson and Mike Pritchard.
College basketball has started, and now is the time to get your copy of our annual betting guide at over 400 pages. It's our biggest betting guide ever with odds, trends, power ratings, and analysis on every team. Our team of experts, including Greg Hoops Peterson and Matt Eumanns, provide their predictions for win totals, futures, conference champions, tournament teams, and breakdowns of all 60 coaching changes since last season. The only way to get the guide is to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Sign up now for just $99 and get VSiN Pro access to everything we do all the way through the Super Bowl. Sign up today. VSiN.com/subscribe. I'm hearing in my ear that they are watching that. We just talked about Mike Pritchard's great catch from 95. They were watching that behind the glass there, Pritch.
Well, it was a different one. It was, that was with
There's multiple now.
There's multiple.
We got the whole Mike Pritchard highlight reel. It's a shame we're not allowed to show the NFL. Come on.
I know. It's on
Come
YouTube,
on, guys.
Though.
Throw us a bone. But just look up Mike Pritchard YouTube. You'll find a lot of great stuff. As we continue on the Lombardi Line, great to welcome back to the show Howard Bender, who you can follow on Twitter at RotoBuzzGuy. Howard does great work for SiriusXM Fantasy. Great to see you once again, Howard. We've since we last talked, a lot more data now and general understanding here for some of the player prop markets and for some of these different teams. The one thing that stood out to me is somebody who is not as in-depth to betting player props as somebody like you. Why have we not seen an adjustment yet to the Justin Fields rushing props? The guy continues to be set in like that mid-50s, low-60s range, continues to obliterate those numbers every single week. What are you seeing when you watch the usage of Fields there in Chicago?
Stop letting them know.
You can tell I'm obviously not the prop guy because I ruined it for everybody.
I don't think you've ruined it for everybody. It's going to be very, very interesting to see what the rushing yard prop is for Justin Fields this week, because this is probably, you know, if you look at the schedule for the Bears coming up, this is probably your last game where you're really going to be able to attack the over on Fields' rushing yards. He's going up against the Atlanta Falcons. They've got a weak run defense. And so, you know, you just see the way he's doing it. I mean, what, over 150 rushing yards or 140 rushing yards in each of the last two, with over 170 in this last one. I think this is a great spot for them, and I think this is a great spot if you're looking for different player props. These are two defenses right now who are matching up where I'm kind of digging on the over in a number of the props that I'm watching for. I'm watching for Fields' rushing yards. I'm going to watch for Montgomery's rushing and receiving yards here with Khalil Herbert sitting on the IR. Atlanta does not handle pass-catching running backs very well. They also don't handle the runs right up the gut very well either. On the other side of that, we all know the Bears are probably the easiest team to target rushing yard props for. And when you've got a three-headed monster like you've got in Cordarrelle Patterson, Caleb Huntley, and Tyler Algier, I think we can kind of, you know, step in and look and see how Vegas is going to make the adjustments for all of those as well. I'm kind of looking at all of those. And you know what? Let's splash in a little Marcus Mariota rushing yard prop here too, because again, the Bears just can't handle the run with any kind of regularity. And we could see Mariota, who's probably averaged somewhere in the neighborhood of like 45 to 50 yards per game over his last six or seven. We could see him pushing through on this one as well.
Yeah, I preach too. I mean, think about how the Bears have become such an over team. That just that total too. It's 49.5. That still feels a little light, even up from 48.5.
I agree. Howard, you know, it's interesting too. When you look at yards per carry in the rushing game, it's like quarterbacks are at the top. It feels like Justin, you got Lamar, you got Josh Allen. I mean, from a prop standpoint, do you break down how teams are running the football, or is it more the matchup, you know, going up against an inferior defense that cannot stop the run? I mean, what are your parameters when you're looking at situations like that?
I mean, it's kind of funny that you guys actually just brought up the over-under in that game, because I feel like it's a very fair number here. I kind of feel like this is one of those games where the defenses are both liabilities, but we're kind of looking at like a 24-24 game with the last team, you know, driving down for a field goal. And, you know, it ends up going like shooting just over that 50-point mark for where at least this game opened up with. There are two things that I look at, though, when it comes to rushing yard props for quarterbacks. It's the run defense, but more importantly, it's what's the opposition's pass rush looking like. If you've got a team with a really strong pass rush that's going to push that quarterback out of the pocket, then you're more inclined to take those rushing yards and do that. Do the Atlanta Falcons have that kind of a pass rush to really push through? I know Grady Jarrett is a quality guy here, but do they have that that pass rush to really intimidate and push Justin Fields out of the pocket? I think that Fields just wants to run anyway, which is why I'm giving him the over this week. But when you're looking at guys like Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, you always have to take into consideration if a team does not have a strong pass rush, if they're light on sacks and they're light on quarterback pressures, you kind of want to pull back a little bit, and you don't want to overinvest too much in a rushing yard prop, because there are just some guys who will just kind of sit back in the pocket if they don't have to, you know, extend the play with their legs too much.
Yeah, I'll throw one other prop angle at you, then we'll get a couple game thoughts just in general here, Howard, heading into Week 11. If for Derrick Henry and the Titans coming up tomorrow, you have a guy who is facing a pretty weak Packer run defense, have been bottom five most of the year, on a short week for Tennessee. We saw how Denver basically sold out to prevent the run, a similarly weak Denver rush defense last week. I'm seeing the books at this, you know, 98.5 here on Derrick Henry. What do you do in a situation like this where you know there's an advantage on one side, but the tax here is pretty significant if you're looking to get involved with Henry?
Yeah, if I'm looking to get involved in Henry, I avoid the tax. It's just, to me, it's just a no bet. When they start pushing that number up that high, you can't always just guarantee that a team is going to turn around and stuff the run and keep Derrick Henry under 100 yards. I mean, he was absolutely crushing, and then Denver turned around and did that. Now, the Packers can do something very similarly because they do have Jaire Alexander hanging out there in the secondary. You know, one of the things that Denver can do to sell out and stop the run is because they do have strong cover corners. Now, Alexander might be a little bit more of a man alone on an island out there in that Green Bay secondary, but they do have some decent strength in their cover corners that they might be able to push up and stop Derrick Henry. I don't necessarily know if they stop him and they keep him under the 100, but that number makes – it's just a little too high for me.
Yeah.
Howard, I want to get to a game, a matchup that I find very intriguing. It's Philly and Indy, you know, Sirianni and the whole thing. We know what's going on with Indy as well, but Philly off to a loss now. On the road, they're laying 6.5. Now, Dallas Goedert's going to be out. Is this offense, the Eagles? I mean, some people say that they got exposed, in terms of the overall team, the philosophy. But Dallas Goedert, I think, could be a big miss for the Eagles moving forward. What are your thoughts on this game and that line in particular?
Yeah, I think the loss of Dallas Goedert is definitely going to be a problem for the Eagles, although I do think that it's more of a problem on their running game than it really is going to be in the passing game. They've got the weapons in A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith, and I'm perfectly confident in the Eagles to turn it around, even though you've got a decent secondary there for Indianapolis. For me, well, I tell you, you know, Jeff Saturday, he motivated that team. They came back. They beat a bad Raiders team. It was, you know, all high, you know, happy-go-lucky. But anybody who bets, NFL games knows that when a team fires their head coach mid-season, roughly 60% of the time that following week, they either win outright or they cover the point spread as an underdog. And so, but then you look to the game right after that, and they kind of come back down to earth a little bit. Now, the Eagles run defense, not good. Ranked 27th in DVOA heading into that game. And that's something that definitely Washington just completely hammered and exposed. And I think they just took the Eagles off guard with that move. The Eagles now with Jonathan Taylor, knowing that Jeff Saturday does the work with the offensive line and is trying to revitalize that ground game, I think that the Eagles, with Darius Slay and a couple of the other corners, have the ability to kind of sell out a little bit more, stop the run, stop that work from Jonathan Taylor, and really force Matt Ryan into a passing attack. Yeah. With this, I can't, you know, he looked, I mean, did you guys watch Matt Ryan run down the field on that 40-yard run? Just incredible. I mean, that was like, I was like, who put oversized clown shoes on that dude, man? It was just killing me. Longer, I just don't have the confidence in that Colts passing attack to really be able to withstand what the Eagles can do as far as coverage. So if the Eagles sell out a little bit to stop that run, I got the Eagles winning this one, and I got the Eagles covering that spread easily.
Especially that adjustment. I mean, from 9 on the look ahead to 6.5, is that a little much of an overreaction? You can make the case. One last one we'll throw at you here in our last 60 seconds. Patriots-Jets rematch. We're seeing a little money come to the Jets here, Howard. Basically a field goal. What do you make of the rematch here?
As the diehard Jets fan who got scolded the last time I was on this team for being a little too bullish on my Jets, I'll just listen. I think that, you know, we could see a repeat of what we saw in the last game here. I never like to bet against Belichick, especially in a divisional game, especially against the New York Jets. My lean right now is the Patriots, and that's probably where I'm even going to go in survivor pools this week.
Oh, so, really?
For better or for worse, that's really all I've got left.
Are you still alive in Survivor? That's probably the more. That's why I say whoa, because you're actually a lot. Wow, Howard Bender.
I know.
Man, you got to be in the circuit contest here, but behind us, there's like 80 people left out of 6,000 or something. Howard, great stuff as always. Thank you so much for joining us. Check him out at Roto Buzz Guy. We'll catch up soon, Howard. Best of luck in Survivor, man. Keep staying alive. All right.
Thanks so much, guys. Always a pleasure.
All right. We wrap up hour number one looking at some big injury news around the NFL, talking Ja'Marr Chase and the Bengals matchup this week.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN
with Ben Wilson and Mike Pritchard.
Make some midweek magic with Light the Lamp Wednesdays at BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. Place a $25 wager on any NHL player to score a goal on Wednesdays, and you'll automatically receive $2 in free bets for every goal scored in the game up to $16. Just log into your account or download the app and sign up with BetMGM to get started. Then all you have to do is opt into the Light the Lamp Wednesdays promotion to receive a $2 free bet for every goal scored in the game, regardless of your prop bet's outcome. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. as today is usually that big injury day on the NFL front. Injury Wednesdays here as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line. One guy we already know will be out for this week. It's Ja'Marr Chase. There's still no timeline for his return, Mike, with the hip injury, walking on crutches this week. Bengals come out of the bye after such a disappointing effort. You know, we saw them last just melt down on Monday night against Cleveland on the road. So you have a Cincinnati team here that we saw how limited they looked offensively without Chase. You've had the bye week now to figure out some other elements of that offense. What do you expect to see out of Cincy here with no Chase and going into a Pittsburgh team that was able to frustrate them in a lot of ways in week one?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about Cincinnati. They kind of take an extra week to figure things out, right? Without Ja'Marr Chase, against Cleveland, that was not a very good performance at all. But then you go out and you host Carolina, and then you have a great running game, and certainly Mixon gets into the fold, and you find a way to win that game. Just put up 42 points, which you wouldn't think would be possible without that superstar. I mean, Ja'Marr Chase, his impact on the league, his impact with the Bengals was immediate, pairing him up with Joe Burrow. So that relationship continued from college, and it was spectacular, led him to a Super Bowl. But he's going to be a big miss, I think, off a bye week. And the pattern of the Bengals, it's like they're going to figure it out, right? Even against the Steelers here on the road. But that's a big miss. It really is. But I think T. Higgins on the other side is a number one receiver on other teams. You know, he had an ankle situation. I think he's going to be closer to 100% now with off the bye. And Boyd is one of those guys too. But they have enough players still to get the job done against the Steelers. Now, got to hold up against T.J. Watt and all right. that stuff now. But from a prolific passing standpoint, I think they can still get that done. But they're going to have to lean on a running game. You know, that was something that they did establish against Carolina. And for the Bengals, hopefully they can continue that against Steelers.
Most of the books, MGM's still one of the few holding out at 4.5. We're down to 4, pretty much market-wide. So a lot of love for the home dog, just like they got a lot of love last week against the Saints. But you look at Cincinnati and you compare, right, the last two games, looking so bereft of ideas against Cleveland in the Monday night spot. Then against Carolina, look like world beaters and absolutely blow the Panthers away to smithereens. Do you get the sense when you watch Zach Taylor's head coach that it's either the game plan works or the game plan doesn't? And if the game plan works,
right,
it's going to be a win and a very impressive, proficient performance. If the game plan originally doesn't work, I at least get the sense, Mike, that that's a coach that has no sense of making in-game adjustments. Do you feel the same way?
Well, yeah, because great players make your job easier. Like, if you are Raheem Morris, and let's go back to last year, and you have Aaron Donald, well, he's going to be a one technique. He's going to be a three technique. He might be a five technique, you know, depending on the matchup, right? We're going to move him all around the line of scrimmage. If you are Zach Taylor and you have a guy like Ja'Marr Chase, then he's going to make your job easier. It's the adjustments without that guy.
Right.
You know, are you in tune with what everybody else can do? Because Ja'Marr Chase makes your job easier, period. But now you have to understand what Joe Mixon can do, understand what Boyd can do, understand what Higgins can do, understand what the tight ends and everybody else. And, okay, where is the pressure? Can we hold up here? Do we have flaws here or faults over here with protection? I mean, all that stuff as a play caller, a head coach, I mean, you have to have a plan. And I think oftentimes when we see a significant player go down, like it used to be the quarterback. If the quarterback went down, okay, the backup quarterback, okay, what's going to happen? But when you lose an impact player like a Ja'Marr Chase or you know, even a defensive player that goes down that's impactful, what's the adjustment? How long is it going to take for that team? And Cincinnati's in the same boat as everybody else. They needed to figure it out, and they did that, certainly with Mixon. But can they be consistent now? That's the question.
And when you think about the first meeting between the teams, and week one, you usually kind of throw that aside.
Right.
It's a one-off, and we're here 10 weeks later, but 7 sacks, 5 turnovers forced by Pittsburgh's defense. Now you don't have Chase, and you're seeing what we saw last out of Pittsburgh. It's easy to see why a lot of bettors are coming in on the home dog here.
Well, they almost won that game, though, Cincinnati.
And that's the thing.
Right, right.
Evan McPherson makes basically an extra point. They win the game still.
Right. Now Pickett is better than Trubisky. Right, I mean, even from a running standpoint, Tuckin runs the play with a rookie quarterback, and Pickett has figured that out. But the playmaking ability on the outside, too, has emerged. Najee Harris is banged up, though. But There's something fundamentally wrong with the Steelers and the youth on that team where they're not technique savvy. And to me, that's showing up all over the place. Now, I don't know if the Bengals can expose that or not, but there's an opportunity, though, for the Bengals. I mean, if this line keeps coming down, I look for that play.
I tend to feel the same way. I mean, New Orleans, you know, couldn't do anything to exploit exactly what you talked about. And without Minkah Fitzpatrick, too, who, again, had statistically not had of his seasons you compared to in the past, had not been having a great year.
Right.
But as much as the benefit of getting Watt back was massive from a pass rush perspective, there were opportunities all over the place in the secondary that Andy Dalton simply couldn't take advantage of because of his – I'm trying to think of a better way to say it, but, yeah, you pretty much said it for me,
right.
Rich. So that's where it becomes tough on Pittsburgh. There are good spots to bet the Steelers when they are, you know, what, home dog coming off a bye situationally against a team on a short week who's limited at the quarterback like New Orleans. This is a totally different animal, though, against a Cincinnati team who is well-rested, much more proficient at that quarterback position. So I don't know how much I'm in love with just the blind backing here of Pittsburgh, while at the same time acknowledging I still have real concerns on Taylor, how he manages games for Cincy.
And the concerns are real, absolutely. And I think you have to keep an eye on that, too. And, you know, the Bengals manufacturing points, you know, and being consistent off of a bye when they've been inconsistent all year long. It's been a roller coaster with the Bengals. So there's a lot of questions. And like I said, if the line keeps coming down, though, they get intriguing. But on the other side of that, obviously the earlier number was a good number to take if you wanted back to steal the show.
No question. From five and a half, now we're seeing down to four in some spots. Other news we track on Wednesdays, too, some transactions coming in. Here's one that was not on my radar whatsoever. We just talked about how you're really interested in where this Philadelphia-Indianapolis line goes and the matchup with a bottom five now Philadelphia run defense. Just signed Linval Joseph.
Ooh.
Linval Joseph is coming into Philadelphia this week. That just happened about a half hour ago. And apparently he's going to make his Eagles debut on Sunday, the former Giants second-round pick. He's 34. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I get it. He's, you know, veteran, but two-time Pro Bowlers had some nice seasons. Philadelphia, though, clearly feeling like they need to try and bolster that run defense against an indie team that, while the run blocking hasn't really been there, still, you have Jonathan Taylor, and that has to be the key to success, I'd think, for Sunday.
Right, but, you know, sharp bettors understanding what Jordan Davis means or meant to the Eagles in that defense and as a defensive tackle, a run stopper. That's something that Washington took advantage of. And you got Saturday on the other side. You got Kevin Mawai, who's a Hall of Famer, on the other side, too, as an offensive line. And Saturday was brought in to fire up the troops.
Mm-hmm.
That's all – not in X's and O's, but – just to fire up the troops, and to give him credit, he obviously did that. The incentive that Matt Ryan had, certainly with his contract, to be inserted as a starter again, that revved him up. And as a head coach, there's nothing wrong with juicing up your players, right? There's nothing wrong with that.
For sure.
But can you be consistent with it? I think Howard was perfect earlier on in our show about that next week, after you come down from being juiced up, you know, can you be consistent now? And so... obviously the Eagles, and I'm not surprised Howie Roseman made a deal here. I mean, it's Mr. Transaction over there in Philly. So that guy and that team, they're going to do everything possible to make sure that they stay on track for that Super Bowl this year.
I get the sense you weren't really surprised then that the Colts, at least for 1 week, responded the way they did.
No, I actually thought about taking the Colts, but it was so comical about how everything happened with Saturday that I just stayed away from the game.
Well, a huge move to them, too. And moved from 6.5 down to 4 by kick.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great opportunity to take the 6.5 points, and that was really the only play to me because of how dysfunctional the Raiders are, too. So, I think from an emotional bulletin board material standpoint, too, because of Ursay, the whole Josh McDaniels thing, I mean, the Colts were coming to Vegas with one thing in mind, and that was the exact revenge and take it to the Raiders, and the Raiders didn't want any part of that.
I cannot wait to get your thoughts on Raiders Broncos.
Oh.
That's we should just spend the whole second hour.
I should have brought my popcorn machine in here.
Yeah, you should have. Unfortunately, we can only talk about that for a little bit. We have a lot to get to in hour number two. Harry Gagnon from the Against All Odds podcast will join us up next. We'll try to sift through a very, very deep injury report for Thursday Night Football. Both Titans and Packers dealing with tons of injuries, and we also play right route, wrong route with Pritch. That's coming up in hour number two.